Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Playboys. We're back with original Playboys. It's Shakespeare time. Myself, the Dean, and Playboy Alex.
Yay!
That fade out was way too slow. So, it's like it's still going.
What do you mean? Your voice faded out perfectly then.
So, we are doing Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes.
Which you told me is also called Love's Labour's One, but which I also call a play about some mean people.
Now, you say that, and we'll get into it a bit later. There are some places I agree with you, and some places I think fits very well into just Shakespearean drama. Like, it just makes sense. You're going to have a fight over some of these things, and...
Oh, yeah.
It's just... The logic works, I feel, in some of these cases.
It does. So let me say that first half, no issues. Second half, I have some problems with the morality, but like those are...
Yeah.
If this is happening now, like I think within this context, it's fine.
Like I can't say I'll defend Beatrice on some points, but then I will defend her on another. Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to say like this is my absolute favorite play Shakespeare's ever done. Maybe it's just because of the version that we watched. I've never seen it performed better. Mm-hmm. And you seem to enjoy it yourself, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I should caveat it by saying this is the first time we've done an episode of any play where I've actually read and watched the play in preparation. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very different, like, it's change of pace, but I feel like reading it may not have given the same feeling necessarily. Like, I don't know, so you read it as well, right? I just watched it this time,
and it took me 25 plays to actually watch one, so that's
I mean there's 40 some or so, so yeah
so I think so far this is our 15th Shakespeare. We've done 9 just or 10 other plays, and look, you know, it's fine. I mean, when it comes to working out the proportion of Shakespeare's, we exclude the histories. So we've actually done quite a good proportion once you exclude all the histories, because, you know, they're boring.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I agree with PJ. We should maybe do Richard III at some point in the future. Maybe after we do some Greeks and come back to Shakespeare or something.
Yeah, but... so you've let the thousands and thousands of new listeners into the secret that we will do some Greek plays in the new year.
I'm pretty sure we've already said that at some point.
Oh, well, I don't know, maybe not. If we did, then we've taken a long time to get around to it. So
Also true.
But no, we said we would do one last Shakespeare before we kind of put a pause on it. So I just thought, let's do it. It's Much Ado About Nothing. The title, very fitting, I think. They don't really get around to anything.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, it is about nothing. It's all because of Don John being a, you know, prick. Like, I know in the version we watched, it may not have shown necessarily, I don't know, like, why? Or they kind of covered it, but we don't really know why I feel that he doesn't like them.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, from reading it as well, I'm no clearer. It's not as if, you know, the play skipped over it or, you know, anything. It's no, from reading it, I still can't figure out his problem. So we've mentioned Don John, and I suppose that's a good segue into the dramatis persona, which I always like to start with. Don John is the bastard brother of Don Pedro, the Prince of Aragon. So that's two chaps. Then we have two young lords of Florence and Padua, respectively, Claudio and Benedict. They're two of our kind of main characters. And we have Leonardo. He's the governor of Messina, and the play is set in Messina, so he's another kind of main character. And Leonardo comes equipped with daughter Hero and niece Beatrice, and they are also... So I suppose those five, right? Claudio, Benedict, Leonardo, Hero, and Beatrice are our kind of core five, and then the others are kind of secondary. Is that fair?
Yeah. I feel... So maybe then Don John doesn't like Claudio and them because he's the bastard son and he's like jealous of them or something, because don't they call Claudio a prince at some point?
Yeah, I mean, my Dramatis Personae says young lord, but during the play they do refer to him as a prince once or twice.
Yeah, so
I don't know,
I wonder if that's part of it, like it that's why be. He's trying to ruin their lives, but he's also not a main character, he's not a main villain, he's kind of nothing.
I saw it as though he's the main villain, but he just doesn't really appear. He's only really in like one or two scenes. Like,
manservant or whoever it is.
Yeah, right? So he has two lackeys, Borachio and Conrad.
Borachio, yeah. He's the other one that we see about as much as Don John.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We also have Antonio, who is Leonardo's brother, in a minor role, and Balthazar, who is Don Pedro's servant, in a minor role. And just to round it off, Hero has two kind of gentlewomen in waiting, or whatever they're called, Margaret and Ursula. And then we have the two police officers, Dogberry and Verges.
Verges, okay. I don't think they ever say his name in the play, so...
I don't think so. And there's a friar as well. I think that's more or less the cast.
Oh, yeah. The friar actually does something in this. I mean, and already does something better than in Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I always
stand
by
it's the friar's fault that Romeo and Juliet has a tragic ending.
It's romance's fault, sir.
It's romance, but it's the friar that caused it.
Well, it's long-term causes and short-term, you know, catalysts. So we open in Messina, and act one, scene one. I should also clarify, if anyone's interested in kind of reading this one, it's not a very long play, to read at least. It's mid-length, you know? And it's also... roughly the middle of his oeuvre, just before the mid mark. So,
and this is where he peaked. Yeah.
Yeah. So we begin with Leonardo and, of course, his niece and daughter, Beatrice and Hero. Now, a couple of times in the opening scenes, my notes say, and others, but like the others don't do anything or say anything. So I don't know. It's always clear to say, like, enter these three people and others, and then the others do nothing. So I don't really know why.
I feel like it's kind of like an entourage or something to show that they're upper class and they have all these people around
them. Yeah,
you'd have that especially for like a party, right?
Yeah. There's one particular scene later with a party where I think that would be fitting. But in the first scene, I'm not so sure. But I suppose it doesn't really matter. And there's a messenger present as well. So Leonardo opens the play and he says that Don Pedro is coming, and the messenger kind of chats with him about that. So that's our introduction to one of our main characters, and Beatrice is there as well. Now, Beatrice is kind of, to use a Shakespearean comparison, she's a little bit shrewish. If we can take that.
I already don't like that word because I don't like that play. But it is very true. She's not a fan of men in general, but then you also have her counterpart Benedict, who's not really a fan of women, and it's like, just come on, like, don't get married, just be a bachelor forever.
Yeah, they're equal and opposite.
Yes.
And so initially the messenger mentions Don Pedro's coming, he's bringing some chaps with him, and you know, Beatrice is asking if Signor Montanto is returning, and then we find out Montanto is really Benedict, and Leonardo explains, the messenger's very kind of prim and proper, and Leonardo explains, no, don't worry, like, don't answer her seriously. She's just has these kind of verbal skirmishes of wit with Benedict, and they don't like each other, but it's all a merry kind of jest, so don't worry about it. And we find out that Don Pedro is going to arrive, and in he comes, accompanied by Benedict himself, and I believe Claudio also at this point, and Balthazar in tow. And John, the villain. But at this point, he doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, he just kind of stands there.
He's just and... with them, yeah.
Yeah.
So they have their little skirmish of wit, and look, some of the things are funny, the way they talk. You know, what, my dear Lady Disdain, are you yet living? And, you know.
Yeah. And it starts off just fantastic, because you have Beatrice and Benedick just going at each other's throats and being... they're just so funny. It's comedy that just continues to today. Like, I wish everything were written like this.
I would say, though, most of the humor is actually in this first scene. There's less of it as we go along, but it's enough to give us that impression of kind of what they're generally like.
Sure. They do get into it a little bit more later.
There's a little bit later, yeah. Just when I watched it, I didn't realize. It was only when I read it afterwards that I kind of thought, oh, most of it's actually, like, a good 3/4 of their jesting is in the opening scene. And it cleverly just puts that idea into your head that this is what they're like, and then you just need to reprise it a little bit here and there to kind of keep that going, you know?
Okay.
Which is very cleverly done. Is it possible, Lady Disdain, are you yet living? And she says, is it possible Disdain should die while she has such meat food to feed it as Signor Benedick? And they just have these little things, you know, a dear happiness to women. They would else have been troubled with a pernicious suitor if he had been interested in women, which he says he's not. So they're always kind of having little stabs at each other, you know, at some point. And she mentions, she repeats something he says, and he says, you're a rare parrot teacher. And she says, a bird of my tongue is better than a beast of yours. He says, well, I would my horse had the speed of your tongue and so good a continuer, because she's kind of quick-tongued. So it's just constant in this first scene, these two, like, back and forth.
And it just, for me, it does seem to continue throughout the play, but maybe less obvious in that case. It's still in most of the lines that they're given, right? So later on, like, for which of my good parts did you first suffer love for me? It's like, oh, suffer love, a good epithet. I do suffer love indeed, for I love thee against my will. It's
yeah, you're right. There is a bit more of it later. Like, yeah.
There's that. And I think our favorite line throughout the entire thing was Beatrice saying, like, what should I do with him? Dress in my apparel and make him my waiting gentlewoman. He that has a beard is more than a youth. After that, Leonardo says, well, then go you to hell.
Yeah, go you to hell. That bit's funny. Yeah, I don't know. But you can tell, I mean, I could at least, from watching it as well as reading it, from the first scene, you can kind of tell, okay, they're going to end up together, right?
Mm. Oh, yeah, you knew that right from the get-go.
And it's funny because, I guess, I don't know if that was meant to be the case. Like, would an audience at the time have realized immediately, or is that something we do because we've seen so many Hollywood movies and all the rest of it? I don't know. But I think for anyone today, it's fairly clear where we're going. So, I mean, I'm not going to go too much in depth into that first scene, but it's a lot of these kind of skirmishes of wit. And really, I suppose what it's doing is just introducing us to the characters, more or less. It's a good long kind of 300 line scene, but I suppose more or less it's just introducing us to the characters, a few skirmishes of wit, and setting the scene for what's going to happen as we kind of go along into the play.
Mm.
They do kind of joke a little bit that, you know, maybe you will get in love later. And Claudio asks a little bit about Hero. And we find out at the end of the scene that Claudio is also into Hero. So we have two potential love stories. And for some reason, and I will never know why, the scene closes. So, you know what I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, you have, like, let's dress up. I'm going to disguise myself as you.
For no reason.
That was Don Pedro?
Yeah, Don Pedro just says, well, Claudio, I'll help you. I'll disguise myself as you, and I'll woo her for you. And I'm just like, but why?
Yeah. Why can Claudio not do it himself? I mean, okay, I get that, like, talking to women can be scary or something. Like, you're just nervous about someone you like, obviously.
I get it, but, like, Don Pedro could put in a word for him without having to impersonate him, you know?
I get why they do it, because you need some sort of conflict in the play to keep a play going. There always has to be a conflict.
Yeah, I suppose.
And so this is when Don John basically says, like, oh, I heard that, or he hears from, I guess, his lackey that, yeah, Pedro is going to do this for Claudio. And
Yeah,
So
yeah.
he's then telling Claudio that, oh, Paige is going to steal her for himself. Be careful.
Yeah. So essentially, right, scene two is only about 20 lines. Antonio speaks to Leonardo and says, I've overheard what's going to happen. And Leonardo says, brilliant. I'll make sure the hero is ready with her answer. And then scene three, which is about 75 lines, is Conrad telling Don John he's also over. So everyone's overheard this conversation. And Baraccio is also there. And he says, well, I've got a kind of a plan. And they decide, essentially, this is where we find out, we introduce the villain, essentially. Don John says, I don't like them for miscellaneous reasons, and I'm going to stop them all from being in love, but no one will really know why.
Yeah.
That's act one.
But it does make sense, I feel, that you have this type of conflict. It doesn't last the whole play, though, which I'm very happy with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this one, doesn't it end at the end of, like, act two, basically? They figure it all out. It's like, oh, that was just some lie. Forget about it.
Yeah, which is weird that the conflict doesn't last. But as you say, it also works.
What's weird is that they believe him later on. Or they believe his lackey later on.
Yeah, actually, that's a fair point. So we open act two. I mean, we're in Leonardo's house for the majority of the early parts of the play anyway. We go away a little bit later, but we're still in Leonardo's house as we move into act two. Enter Leonardo, Antonio, Hero, and Beatrice. And again, it says, and others who don't speak. So I guess the idea is it's supposed to be just a constant big party in this house. There's a big train of people kind of come back from the war or whatever. So just all hanging around. And Leonardo asks why Count John is not at supper. And then Beatrice says he's tartly looking, and they just kind of slag him off a little bit. But it's interesting because here already Beatrice mentions the perfect man would be between John and Benedict. So you kind of get that little extra hint that, okay, she's got her problems with Benedict, but she also sees some good points in him that she's maybe pretending not to. There's a little hint thrown in there.
I feel like she's saying between the devil and another devil. I feel like she has zero respect for Don John, as everybody does.
Yeah.
And then she's also like, yeah, but Benedict is also a terrible person. So there is no man for me, which comes up later on, right? So, but
yeah, I mean, she does seem to think that she's going to have no man. So I suppose that's fair. This is where we get the famous line that you mentioned. Go
he
you
that
into
hath a
hell.
Beard is more than a youth, and he that hath no beard is less than a man.
Now, I was mortally offended. I don't know if you were, but reading this, when it basically says, he who has no beard is not a man. And I was like, aw.
You're less than a man, yes.
Less than a man, yeah. But
which
also
means that you,
go ahead.
You're a youth. That means you're a youth.
Well, I'll take it. But I'm going to say, they say, being cursed, God will send you no horns, just if he send me no husband, for the which blessing I am at him upon my knees every morning and evening. Lord, I could not endure a husband with a beard in his face. I would rather lie in the woolen. You may lie on a husband that hath no beard. He says, what should I do with him? Dress him in my apparel and make him my wedding gentlewoman? I was like, okay, so no beard just makes him essentially a woman. Like, that's what I'm seeing here. And I was a little bit offended by that. And she kind of says, what use is he to me? But then, as she pointed out, she doesn't want him regardless. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, Benedict gets into it a little bit more later for his perfect woman. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think we get that a little bit later, and it's perfect.
So he's
woman
like,
is, well,
he wants her to be wise and beautiful, and her hair color, I'll leave it unto God, basically.
It's the only bit that we can leave unto God. So we have some everything else. He had very specific intentions. Beatrice says, Adam's sons are my brethren, and it's a sin to, you know, to marry my kindred. So she doesn't need to take anyone. That's the specific way she phrases that. And then in come all the other characters. So Don, Pedro, Claudio, Benedict, Balthazar, John, Baraccio, Margaret, Ursula, and others. Everyone's in, but they're all masked. Now, in the version we watched, this was a delightful scene, but the disguises were left a little bit to be desired because it's very clear who was who.
Yes, yes. But I do think that's part of the joke later on because Beatrice is like, oh yeah, I know exactly who this guy is. Right?
And then yeah.
That's
yeah.
why she says that, which one did she make him out to be? Like Don John or something? Just say like, oh, look how terrible you
Yes,
you
she
are.
Does. Yeah, yeah. So we get through this and everybody has a little chat and kind of pairs off and steps aside. So Don Pedro chats with Hero, Balthazar chats with Margaret, and we find out later that that's going to be important, that they do have potentially some kind of understanding. Ursula chats with Antonio, but Antonio pretends that he's not Antonio. So at this point, nothing serious is really happening. They're all wearing masks and they're trying to figure out who everyone is. And, you know, there's a bit of music playing and they're having a bit of a party, essentially. It's a fun but lighthearted scene, but it is a very important scene because it goes for like 350 odd lines. So it a lot does get kind of developed as we go on. We get this little conversation, this next skirmish between Beatrice and Benedict that you alluded to there moments ago, and she kind of slags off Benedict, you know, kind of knowing that it's him, I think, but she has the defense that she isn't meant to know it's him, so she can just kind of really go to town on him a little bit, and hurts his poor little feelings.
Yeah, it is a little sad for him.
And then when most of them leave, and we get a little conversation between some of the lads at the end, everyone leaves apart from John, Borachio, and Claudio. But then after that, John and Borachio, after planning their usual, mischief, they also leave. And Claudio is on his own. This is the amazing scene now where Benedict comes. Let's see. So Benedict comes back in and asks Claudio to go with him. I wish for joy. Let's just see what happens. This is going to be the scene where they do the hide behind the tree and everything, isn't it? Or is that a little bit later?
So act two, scene three is when they do that.
Okay, yeah. So we're a little bit ahead of that then.
A little bit. Basically, you have Benedict saying something. He goes off stage. I forget. So he's there for a bit and hides once he sees everyone else come in. I think Claudio first has to talk to Pedro to hear about Hero wanting to be with him.
Yeah, I've just remembered what happens first. Is that it's not important, but it's that little bit where Benedict asks Don Pedro, can you send me on any service? Like, send me to Asia, send me, you know, on any yes. ridiculous task to kind of get away from Beatrice, because after what she's said about him, essentially. So it's just adding a little bit more fuel to that whole thing. And yep. Beatrice points out the Count is neither sad nor sick nor merry nor well, but has a jealous complexion. And that is more or less that. So this is yeah. Claudio they're referring to now.
Yeah.
He's jealous because he thinks that Don Pedro has wooed not for him, but for himself.
Yep.
Which is not true.
So Pedro basically explains it right away. And this is the first time I've seen in Shakespeare where it's like, oh, that explanation was very easy and everything's fixed. And they're yeah. friends again.
I'm always complaining about this. Like, if they would just have a conversation. And they do this time.
They
it's done.
Finally do. And that's the end of the first conflict. That normally that would get everyone in the play killed in any tragedy, I mean. And
yeah, yeah. And so everyone would be killed or, yeah. you know, in disguises. And this time he's just like, no, here's what happens. All right, cool.
Now, okay. Do you think this should have just been a three-act play, though?
I mean,
so you have the hiding. So in the play yeah. itself, he's in an orchard. He hears that, Pedro, everyone, like, they see Benedict was there and that he's hiding. Benedict doesn't know that they know that. So they're like, all right, let's just play a prank on him and say that Beatrice loves him. And this is the most comedic scene for me, at least in the version that we saw, because you yes. have him in a Christmas tree, basically, or behind curtains. And like when he hears Beatrice loves him, just things break in the background. They drop some plates and things crash. And it's a really funny gag, I feel.
So the version we saw was very funny. And I'll get to that in about 10 seconds. As a very quick aside, just for the sake of completion, Act 2, Scene 2 is about 50 lines where John talks to Borachio again, and they just make more plans to cause mischief. That's just kind of inserted in between these two scenes. And this is the bit where they're going to try. I mean, basically their plan, and I'm skipping ahead a little bit, is they're going to get Margaret to pretend to be hero and get people to overhear them. So they mention it here, and then it's going to happen later. But this is just where they first kind of hatch the plan. So now we get to the scene that you mentioned, and it is the best scene in the play. The version we watched is hilarious. I was disappointed then when I read it afterwards, because that humor doesn't really come out the same. Like, that was really good direction that we saw.
It was entirely the director. Yeah, yeah. And I feel like this is where you might have had issues with Twelfth Night, right? So there's a scene where they're overhearing Malvolio reading the letter and all that, and you didn't really enjoy it that much. And I feel like you would have had that same type of feeling if you hadn't watched the full play this time. I don't know.
Like, that's a very fair point. But I have a question, and I don't know the answer to it. You know, I feel like I have this idea of, like, purism, like, the best ways to do it, like, word for word, what's in this copy of Shakespeare that I have. But the version we saw, you know, added a lot of gags that aren't really here, but massively increased the enjoyment. So I kind of don't know where I stand on that anymore.
Yeah, I feel like having, if it can improve the play, right? But this is the one, this is why it's my favorite play, is because this is the one that actually can add things to it.
Yeah.
I have seen some versions, and you've probably seen a little bit as well, that just detracts from the play, right? I will always go to the version of Macbeth that the Royal Shakespeare Company did. That was just pointless, the changes that they made or some of the things they added. I don't know.
And what I will say here is the things they add increase the humor. They don't take anything away. You know, they don't affect what's there. There's no subtraction. It is just, here's a little bit extra to increase the humor. And I think that's why they're getting away with it. You know, they haven't gone in and, like, made any drastic changes. They've just put a little sprinkle on top.
Yeah, basically.
And I think that's why it works. This is quite a long scene. It's about 250, 260 lines, something like that. But essentially, it's these comedic moments. But the overall gist of it is, they're having this conversation with Benedick in the background, but they're trying to convince him by saying that Beatrice likes him. So essentially there's a double plan here. They're going to try to talk about Beatrice liking Benedick in front of Benedick, and they're going to try and talk about Benedick liking Beatrice in front of Beatrice. And the idea, I suppose, is that by them both thinking the other one likes them, they'll just get together somehow. And it works.
Yeah, it somehow does work. And this is where, you have to just suspend your disbelief. It's like, oh, maybe I was that boy on the playground who was actually just flirting with the girl when I was being mean to her. And I feel like that's a little bit of a dirty feeling to have these days.
But it's a stereotype I've never understood. You know, like, I would never be mean to someone because I like them. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is also the one that has my favorite monologue from him, the one I was talking about earlier. Basically, rich she shall be, that's certain. Wise, or I'll none. Virtuous, or I'll never cheapen her. Fair, yes. Or I'll ever look on her. Mild, or come not near me. Noble, or I'll not for an angel. Of good discourse, and an excellent musician. And her hair shall be of what color, please God?
You love that scene. It's very good.
It is. So
that's act two.
That's act two. We're already two-fifths of the way. Act three, isn't this when they basically have the wedding?
Not yet. So I'm going to say the first half of this play is great. It goes downhill a little bit in the second half. And that includes first half of act three in with the first half. Because act three, scene one, is the same scene again in not in reverse, gender swap scene, right?
Beatrice.
So they do it with Hero. So Hero and Margaret and Ursula
less,
talk.
It's less humorous. It's less humorous. I wish they kind of could have done more. But yeah, you had to have had it with Beatrice as well, just so that the play works.
Yeah, and it's quicker as well. It's only about 100 lines this time, 110, you know, and they just kind of do the same thing again. So I guess it was never going to be as good watching essentially a copy and paste, but it just gets us. I think it's still fine. I think it's after that scene that things go downhill.
I feel like if it were modern times, Shakespeare could have done a rewrite on it and maybe pulled the rug out from under us in a couple of ways. Like, kind of, I don't know, do something unexpected. Because it just seems to just be like paint by numbers here. Like, all right, we have to have this happen and this happen. And
yeah, maybe there was a better way that that could have been done. I don't know. I don't know. We go to Act 3, Scene 2. Not really a lot happening in this one. It is just over 100 lines, 120 lines. Nothing really happens in it. The lads are talking, Claudio, Benedict, Dom Pedro. They are looking at Benedict and they're kind of saying, oh, has he changed a little bit? And they mention that he's been, I think they mentioned he shaved his beard, actually. He looks younger by a beard or something like that, they say. So, but they're trying to figure out if he's in love, basically. So driving the plot a little bit, but then towards the end of the scene, John comes in, and this is where it picks up. Because John says, I've got something to say, Pedro, but I suppose it's okay for Claudio. So, yeah, he says, Pedro, I want to talk to you, but I suppose it's okay for Claudio to overhear, and then turns directly to Claudio and starts speaking to him and basically says, oh, yeah, you're going to marry Hero. She's unfaithful.
Yep, she's been talking to this guy outside her window, which is apparently showing that she's unfaithful for talking to someone.
Yeah, it's the late at sign night? Of the times. But we don't actually see that scene, which I think is the biggest flaw of the whole play. We don't see this actually happen. They just tell us that it happened.
I know. I mean, I feel like that would have taken another act just to set up, though.
Maybe, but they could have cut out all the Dogberry and Verges stuff.
Now, the introduction of Dogberry, I will say, is probably the slowest scene in the entire play. I can get through any other scene pretty quickly, whether it be loving it or just looking forward to the next scene.
Yeah.
The Dogberry one, for us, it was right after intermission where they introduced them. And I feel like if it's right after intermission, you got to bring us back in. You have to really hook us with something that's fun. That's why usually at the beginning of like a musical for the second half, they would have a really, really exciting, energetic song to get everyone back into it. And we just start with Dogberry just being like, all right, you guys are now helping me.
I was so confused. Like, why are we, where are we? What's going on? Is this a different play?
Is this a different play? Yeah. Now, Dogberry, he's given a quirk that he just mistakes words. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, he says the opposite word that he's meaning to say a lot of the time. And that's his humor. And it is kind of funny. Like, I don't want to downplay it. I think he's a funny character, to be honest.
Yeah, he's the first clown you've been able to actually somewhat enjoy, which is already fantastic.
Yeah, so like, I was happy with that. I don't dislike it. I just don't know why he's there.
I think it's the direction for the version we saw, which, if anyone's interested, you can find it as, Love's Labor's One on marquee.tv, not a sponsor, but I think it's worth knowing.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly recommend that version, so that's absolutely. So yeah, Act 3, Scene 3 is the scene that we're essentially talking about. They introduce the watch. It is quite funny because the watch keeps saying, well, what do we do? And they say, well, you know, if you see a thief, what do we do? And they say, let him, I love this, one of my favorite lines, they say, let him prove his character and steal out of your company, as in just let him slip away. And, you know, they kind of say, well, can we not put our hands on him and stop him? And they say, well, you could do technically, but it would always pollute you to be involved with a thief. So just leave him alone, you know. So they're the watch, but they're not meant to actually apprehend any criminals because it would, pollute
them. That's why they would be called the watch. Yeah, you just watch them do
that. They just watch, yeah.
Yeah, but luckily they do actually do their jobs. No thanks to Dogberry and Verges just being kind of useless.
They actually they ignore the instructions and they actually do a good job as the watch, and they apprehend Baraccio and Conrad.
Yeah. Now, we're not there yet. I think this is Act 4, but when Dogberry comes back on to tell Leonardo right before the wedding, or is that here in Act 3, the wedding?
So yeah, that's essentially, this one's just under 200 lines, and that's essentially what we have. They apprehend Conrad and Baraccio. The funny thing is, and I am skipping ahead a little bit, the watch apprehend them for good reasons, by the time we get on a little bit, we realize that Dogberry and Verges completely do not understand those reasons and sort of arrest them for totally different reasons.
I mean, they do say that they were plotting against Claudio, which it sounds like is treason, basically. But yeah, before they do talk with Leonardo, you just have the scene with the hero Beatrice just, you know, getting ready for the wedding, basically.
Yeah, it's just kind of slotted in here in the middle of this. It's a little bit out of place, and it's only about 90 lines, a brief scene where the girls just chat, and essentially, yeah, they are just getting ready for the wedding, having a bit of girl chat.
Yeah, I consider it a little bit of character development. I think I'm fine with it. It's not really that important, but...
My only problem is that it's slotted in between the two scenes with the watch. Maybe if they just don't start or, you know, before or after, I find it weird to have it in the middle, you know, but it doesn't really matter.
I feel like, yeah, if they were, he'd have to connect it in a different way, I feel. Because you couldn't just end the scene and start the next one with that.
Yeah.
Because it's a different day, right? It's at night to day.
Yeah, I suppose, but maybe I'm being pedantic. I suppose it's fine. And we wrap up act three with a very, very short scene five, to about 50 lines. And essentially, Dobry and Virgis come after Leonardo now, and he says, look, I'm busy with the wedding. Go take the, you know, deal with it yourself. Do the kind of imposition or take the depositions yourself. In the play that I have here, as I say, it's 50 lines. It's very brief, and it lacks personality. In the version we watched, this was a long and funny scene.
Yep. You have Pedro, he's just trying to, or sorry, Leonardo, he's just trying to get away and like, hey, guys, I gotta go. And Dogberry just keeps interrupting him, and I don't think it's like gags necessarily, but it's because I feel like the director and each of these characters knows Shakespearean language so well.
Yes.
They're able to then read into it a bit more. And I looked up the training that they were doing for this before, like to prepare for this play. And what they were doing is they were trying to say the lines basically how we would say them today, right? Not going for like the over the top, like melodramatic type of expression here.
Sure.
It's basically like, it's just trying to make it, I don't know, down to earth type of people, that things that you would normally hear.
And I think that it's done superbly. I was so disappointed when I read this scene and I realized it's just this little 50 line by the number scene after the funny version we watched, which, I mean, we actually sympathize with Leonardo because he says that Dogberry's tedious, and he is, and even we're kind of like, okay, come on, get to the point, you know?
Yes, and if it's only 50 lines, it's like, that's nothing. Like, that's really, that'll take like 5 minutes, if that.
Yeah, this version feels like it's an unimportant scene, whereas, okay, it's not important, but I suppose the version we watched, it just seemed like a bigger scene, you know? So any improvements in the version we saw, I think, are for the better.
I generally agree, yeah. And now the scene that...
This is where it all goes downhill. So the reason I said the second half is bad, I mean, so far I've actually said good things about it. I just feel like the scenes with the watch were good but irrelevant. Now from Act 4, this is when I think it starts to kind of annoy me morally, if we should say.
Yeah, and here's where I'm not going to necessarily disagree, but then I will disagree in some other areas.
Yeah, and that's cool.
So, yeah, this is the wedding.
This is the wedding.
Starts off very poorly.
Yeah, so I mean, initially there's a little joke, which I'm going to remember for the rest of my life, when they say, are you here to marry this lady? And he says, no. And then the guy goes, ah, well, of
course.
You're
to marry her too.
Yeah, you're not here to marry her. You're here, the friar is marrying her. You're getting married to her. And I thought, ah, okay, technically that's right, even though it's not how we say it nowadays.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start correcting everyone when they say they're getting married. Oh, did you come ordained?
Yeah, there you go.
The people will love me.
Exactly. Just make sure you correct their grammar too.
Yeah.
You know?
People love that.
Yes.
So this is a long scene. I think it's like 330 lines. Like, it's a good long scene.
Yeah, you're
to
right.
To be honest, it's the most, act four is two scenes, the second one's brief, so it is a one scene act mostly. Everyone's in the church, and again, I'll give the brief summary here. Claudio decides that he has heard, although we don't see it, this business about Margaret pretending to be Hero and Borachio, or whichever one it is, going out and pretending to be Claudio, so that when it's overheard, it looks like Hero's talking to someone else at night, right? I'm almost imagining a Romeo and Juliet balcony scene, but with another guy.
kind of is. Yeah. That would have actually been very interesting to see if Shakespeare could then parody Shakespeare with that balcony scene. So I do actually agree with you now that that would have been nice to add that type of scene in.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not, but look, it's fine. You know, we'll accept that it's not there. What I don't understand is Claudio then says his intention is not to be married. So I have two problems straight away. Number one, why doesn't he talk to her first of all and ask, you know, what's going on? But number two, even if he's decided, you know what, I don't even care what's going on, I don't want to marry her, why does he go to the church and go through with the ceremony just to humiliate her in front of everyone?
Because it is entirely to humiliate her. And no, my big problem with it is, okay, Don John was just caught lying about Don Pedro trying to steal Hero for himself. Now you're trusting him to say all this other stuff about Hero being untrustworthy?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you, Claudio? Like, you're
and
an
they
idiot.
Don't like Don John, so I don't know why they trust him so easily.
Exactly. Like, you are... I understand why you would trust Iago, right? It makes perfect sense.
Honest Iago, of course.
Yeah. But nobody likes Don John. Why is he there? It's so annoying. But yeah, basically the scene, like, you have Claudio confront Hero saying that you have been untrustworthy. He somehow gets Leonardo to believe it.
But he's so vile. He's so vicious as well. He doesn't say, like, I heard these rumors. What's going on? He just goes off on her. Like, he's really mean.
Yeah. Like, this is your daughter. Okay. Now, I am trying to take myself to the time period. And I see, like, all right, if this were to happen, yeah, the father probably would have disowned his daughter. Murder might be a bit far, but I don't know. Again, stealing 5p at the time would have gotten you killed.
So look, my first problem is that Claudio shows, because, you know, if I loved someone, I was about to marry them, and I heard something bad about them, I mean, sure, like, would it just delay the wedding? Would it cancel? But I wouldn't just immediately turn to hatred, you know? Like, you're supposed to be in love with them. Like, but he's just like, well, she's essentially dead to him already, you know?
And well,
that's shocking
love,
to me.
The love here, and for the most part, love in Shakespeare, and probably even at the time, it was just based on beauty, right?
I suppose.
So it was, yeah, she's beautiful. I want to marry her. She's also very good at, like, sewing and cooking and stuff.
Leonardo now believes this about his daughter, and now I'm annoyed again because he's like, well, with zero evidence, you know, it's hearsay based on other hearsay, and he's just like, okay, I hate my daughter, and she swoons and appears to be dead, and he's just like, I hope she never gets up. Like, he wants his daughter to be dead, and I'm horrified.
It's so extreme. Now, you were saying, like, there's no way she would be dead. But I'm thinking, like, you know, in Shakespeare, it kind of makes sense.
It does. But if this had been me, though, and I'd had a, you know, I'd said, look, I'm not going to marry you. I heard that you're a, you know, bit of a strumpet or whatever they would have said back then. And I storm out of the church and someone came to me 5 minutes later and said, oh, she's just died in there. I'd be like, what? Like, how?
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
is she broken, dead?
Broken heart, even though she barely knows him. Yeah. Now, the part we disagreed on, will disagree on probably the most, it comes up later. Everyone else has left the church. Claudio has no remorse. He doesn't have much remorse throughout the play until
that is
Act
also
five.
Shocking that he doesn't that, even care that she's dead.
Yeah. Oh, actually, before that, I want to say the friar. I really like the friar here. He's like, guys, you're insane. Just calm down. What the hell? This is your daughter. At least let her have a trial.
Yeah, although what I found interesting was he's basing all this on, I saw her blush like a maiden, therefore she couldn't possibly have cheated on you. And he just, like, stakes his reputation on it. You know, like, he's had very little evidence either. Like, everyone is really very extreme in their convictions here.
Yeah, maybe just because it's the friar, he wants to believe in the good in people and stuff, and it's probably some analogy towards the church. And
yeah, maybe. But as always, Hero barely defends herself. When directly asked, she says, I didn't talk to anyone, and then she swoons. Like, she doesn't say, like, what the hell is going on, guys? You know, like, she doesn't give him an outburst, which I would expect any modern human to do. She just stands there and takes it and then almost dies.
Yeah. It's a bit strange, and I feel like this is probably one of the slower scenes. The Dogberry stuff gets really slow, but this is probably next up on the list.
Yeah, because the second half of this, it's kind of slow now. After the friar has his interjection, they're just kind of like
Yeah.
chatting a little bit. The friar says like a
Although,
big long monologue at one point of like good 50 lines or
yeah.
something.
I feel like once everybody leaves, though, Benedict and Beatrice being here and talking with each other, I actually do kind of enjoy it. I feel like they have some more chemistry here. They connect better. And this is what I was saying where we disagree.
This is where we're lost. Yeah.
I understand why Beatrice basically says, yeah, can you kill him?
Well, I like their tête-à-tête, okay? I think it's good for their characters to have this little scene here because you haven't had them alone in a while. But here's my problem. We've talked about this before, about this, like, don't test your partner and things. And Benedict basically says, like, I want to profess my love to you now. And I think, brilliant. It's all going the right way. And she's like, yeah, I would do the same thing, but I do need you to do something for me. And he actually says that, I give you my hand or something. And just, well, you should use your hand to declare your love in other ways than just presenting it to me. You should kill Claudio. And he's kind of outraged by this at first, but is easily persuaded, man being easily persuaded by the woman he loves to do this. But the problem is, she's asking him to commit a murder and kill Claudio, which could then also, wind with him in jail. Like, I just feel like that's a. I don't like Beatrice anymore.
So the part where I agree with you, it's testing your lover. I do have to say that you are correct on that. It is pretty indefensible in this case, I feel. The part where I would disagree, though, is that I understand why she wants him to kill Claudio, though. Like, if she were to do it in any better way, I could understand it. He has made her family look terrible. If this gets out that their family is just like willing to sleep with everybody, it would just ruin their reputation within society. And
Oh,
so I feel
yeah.
like if this were a legitimate duel, then I think that it would make more sense.
Well,
But she's saying, like, to prove your love, now you got to kill someone. No. How about I love you too? Can we together kill him? That would make a bit more sense.
Yeah, look, I get why she's unhappy because Claudio said all these horrible things and essentially left Hero for dead and, doesn't give a damn. It would be
He's
okay to
the.
say you hate him. It would almost be okay to say, like, oh, I wish he was dead. But to actually commission the murder feels a step too far, you know?
Again, I think it's like Shakespeare. It just makes sense to me in this
Yeah.
play. So I'm fine with that part for the
But
most part.
good guy
But yeah.
Benedict doesn't, try to kill Claudio unawares. He just challenges him to a
Yeah.
duel.
Yeah, Benedict is somehow the best character,
Yeah,
which
which is shocking from the first scene, right?
yeah.
But
It's
Beatrice
also
is happy
shocking to
enough.
himself, probably.
Yeah, Beatrice is happy enough that she's challenged him to a duel, even though he could die. And I felt sad for him there.
Yeah, why would you want that to
You know?
happen? Like, can't it just be like a Macbeth type thing? Just kill him in his sleep.
Yeah, right. I said there was a short second scene in Act Four, and we're back with Dogberry and Verges and Baracho and the Watch and everyone, but they've now found a sexton, and this is the scene in the. Again, this is a lot longer and better in the version we watched. Here it's about 70 lines. The version we watched, they're getting up and they're turning the table around and they're walking around it, and it's got good visual comedy.
It does.
Here is just, here are their lines. Let's move on to the last act.
And as a director, you want that to happen, I feel. Because if it's just listening to this, this is where you lose people.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
to add that to it, you're keeping people connected because the director knows that this scene is going to lose people.
Yeah.
So he knows he has to add something,
He
which
has
I
the
really
benefit of
appreciate.
experience that maybe Shakespeare didn't realize, that this scene would lose people.
But I mean, you can say that about a lot of like movies. A movie can be ruined by a bad director with good writing, right? Or good writing can then be like, or bad writing can then be saved by a good director, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fair. So the only salient point here is it's funny because the Watch have overheard So these guys are basically admitting very freely and easily now. They don't try to protect on John. They're just like, oh yeah, he told us to do all this stuff. Even though actually Borachu had some of the ideas, he's like, yeah, look, Don John told us to do all this terrible stuff, so, you know, screw him. And the Watch have caught on to this, and they've arrested them for being involved. But Dogberry and Virgis, they think the crime is slandering Don John, not what Don John has done. Or, you know, they're like, that's funny to me.
It is kind of funny, yeah. I like that they are willing to turn. It makes everything just easier. And this is what you want to happen as someone viewing it, I feel. It's like, oh, I'm just so tired of, all right, we got to go through the whole interrogation scene. No, it's actually pretty easy.
Yeah, and Dogberry's annoyed that they call him an ass. And they're asking to write that down.
Yes, and that I've been written down an ass. And it comes up later in the next scene, too.
Yeah, he brings it up. So
what have they done? He called me an ass.
So we move on to Act 5. We got four scenes here. Scene 1 is, again, the longest, the main scene of the play. It's, again, about 330 lines. So it's, you know, half on its own. We enter with Leonardo and Antonio, who really hasn't done anything the whole play. I don't know why he's in the play, to be honest.
Who is he again?
Right! Antonio is the brother of Leonardo,
that's,
I believe.
Right.
But he doesn't
the
do
brother,
anything.
The old man. He's the one who's only here because he has a daughter, supposedly. Like, that's the only thing that Shakespeare does with him.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you have a daughter now, and I'm going to put her up for marriage, as we will see later on.
So, look, they talk to Leonardo. Antonio is consoling him a little bit in the opening lines. And then Claudio and the chaps come in, Claudio and Don Pedro. Don Pedro all the whole time is a kind of neutral peacekeeping character, which I like.
Yeah.
But Claudio comes in and just chats away like nothing's wrong. And Leonardo's really annoyed. He's kind of like, what's the problem? It's like, well, you said all these horrible things about my daughter, and now she's dead. And I just come in the next day and you're like, oh, how's it going, mate?
Yeah.
Claudio doesn't get it. He's like, well, who wrongs him? Like, what's going on?
Mary, thou dost wrong me. Thou dissembler, thou. They never lay their hand upon thy sword. I fear thee not.
This really made me hate Claudio.
Yes. Like, he is such a terrible character. How does he... Now, he does see his wrong kind of later on, but only when it's...
Only when it works out okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Here, he's like, my villainy? Like, you say wrong, old man. Like, I haven't done anything.
Like, yeah. You could come to some sort of agreement here. At least, like, to not ruin their household or kill the daughter.
Yeah. And they're having so they're all having a bit of an argument. And then enter Benedict. And they saw, you know, just the person that we were
Benedict
we're
basically
going to see.
Gives the dare, or
he gives the challenge to Claudio. Yeah, they don't do it right now, though, which is fortuitous. Otherwise, one of them would be dead.
Maybe both. Who knows? Shakespeare likes
potentially both dead or at least wounded. But now we find out. So this is the line: "Runs not this speech like iron through your blood?" And Borachio and Dogberry and co. come in, and this is the reveal, right? This is the reveal scene where they say, ah, Don John planned the whole thing, and, you know, here's what happened, and Margaret was dressed up like Hero and everything else, and, you know. And now Claudius says, I've drunk poison whilst he uttered it. And now they act like it's all Don John's fault, which, look, he did a bad thing, but he didn't owe anything to Claudio, right? He didn't owe anything to Hero. They were engaged and owed a bond of trust to each other, and Claudio is a bad person.
Yeah, you know, that's fair. Now, I do feel like as the instigator, though, Don John is still liable for anything that happens afterwards.
You think so?
This is I feel like this could be a very philosophical discussion. Like, is Claudio is Don John somewhat to blame for Claudio's actions for then starting these thoughts in his head?
I want to say no. I mean, what he does is he arranges this little ruse.
Othello?
He arranges a little ruse where people dress up. which isn't a crime or, you know, anything like that. Yeah, he knew what he was doing. I'm not saying he's a good person. But Claudio could have asked for, like, some evidence or spoken with Hero, got her testimony. He leaves her for dead, you know. He humiliates her and leaves her for dead. And I don't think that was called for. And I think he's much, you know, he is to blame 10 times more than Don John is. And, you know, if I'm Hero, yeah, I might be annoyed at Don John, but I'm heartbroken by Claudio, the man who supposedly loves me.
Yeah, you know, I'm fair. I can see that being fair. Now, I wonder then, that seems very similar then with Othello, because, like, Iago didn't really do anything physically. He just put these thoughts into the Moor's head, and
I feel like
Othello
you're right.
The one who killed Desdemona.
You're right, so, but I think that play, in a sense, it's a, I don't want to say it's a better play, but that particular thing is done better, right? You feel like Iago is a bit more of a master manipulator, and he's convincing Othello, and you can almost see Othello going a bit crazy with it, whereas Don John just does a thing and then disappears. You know, he's no one.
He's not a manipulator. But then why does he flee? He flees the country.
He's going to get in trouble, I guess. Because all the characters now, they're just friends again. And they're just like, yes, it's all because of Don John. And it's, I guess it's easy to just have a scapegoat who's gone, right? So now we just go back to normal.
I mean, he is the one who plotted it all. So I get why he would be the scapegoat. Scapegoat feels like he'd be innocent. Anyway.
Sorry, he's not quite a scapegoat, but it's just an easy thing to put all the blame on and you know, act like everybody else is fine again, you know?
I do like, to an extent, I don't necessarily like where they go with it, but I do like that once Dogberry shows that Hero was totally innocent, that they're like, all right, we're going to have to punish Claudio now. I'm like, yeah, do it. He deserves it. But his
Claudio
punishment
now
is to marry
says he'll
someone
mourn Hero.
Else.
Claudio will only now mourn Hero after she's innocent, which I don't like. You know, you're supposed to love this girl. But you're right, they do punish Claudio a little bit by going through a bit of nonsense.
It is entirely not. I don't know how I feel about the ending.
No, I don't know either.
We're getting there, but he's basically forced to marry somebody. And it looks like it's Antonio's daughter that he'll be forced to marry. He doesn't know who this person is. And she's like, all right, yeah, that's my punishment. I'll just have to marry this random person that I don't love.
Yeah. So that's scene four. I will just quickly, there's two short scenes in between where not a massive amount happens, but just for the sake of kind of wrapping up. Scene two, Benedict and Margaret are talking, and then Beatrice comes in, and I mean, not a massive amount happens, but I think this is where they realize that each other has written each other letters, and
I do like the love letter
in love, so that's kind of, you know, nice. It's about 100 lines, and then scene three is only 30 lines, so it's really nothing. But it's Dom Pedro, it's inside the church again, and it's the funeral scene. They go ahead and hold the funeral for Hero, who is not really dead.
Spoilers.
And we're on to scene, well, we're on the last scene, so
we're on the end now.
Last scene, just over 100 lines. It wraps up very quickly, but it, as you say, it's interesting. They're bringing a bunch of girls. They're all masked. We don't know why, because they say, this is the right one. Will you marry her? Sort of sight unseen. And Claudio feels this debt for his wrongness. And he's like, yes, I will. And then, of course, she looks exactly like Hero. And they say, oh, yeah, because, you know, it's her identical twin cousin, I guess.
Yeah, so this is where we differed again. You think that potentially he doesn't know that it's actually her. And I'm thinking like, oh, they have to know that it's her. And it's just like their way around it. They're just speaking around it so that it's...
But then why would they go to the, why would they hold a funeral and everything? Why wouldn't they just say, you know, okay, this is really Hero. They hold a funeral for Hero. And she says, Hero is, you know, he looks at her and says, another Hero? And she says, like, yeah, one is dead, but, like, I am another or something like that. And
The reason I see it, it's to prolong his punishment. It's to make him feel even worse, like he has to mourn for her death and feel bad about it.
Maybe. But and now, officially, he's married to, like, officially, Leonardo is not his father-in-law. Antonio is, and, like, the whole thing is a mess, right?
Was it for political gain or anything? I don't know.
She had a good she had a lot of money. Actually, she was an heiress, and we don't know if the niece is an heiress. So it's unusual. There's one little detail. This is not important, but it confused me when we watched it, and it confused me again when I read it. Because obviously we've got this interesting scene with where, you know, he's marrying the niece and everything, right? And it's not really the niece. I got the two love stories mixed up because Benedict and Beatrice are talking, and there's a weird line where they mention they basically say that Beatrice loves Benedict, and Benedict says to Leonardo, like, I like the way she looks at me, or something like that. And he says she got it from her sister. And it's a weird line because I'm thinking, hold on, is this the cousin thing? Is this hero and the other? No, I don't understand why that line is in the play. It just caused me like a massive amount of confusion twice.
I don't remember that line at all. The one where we got confused was, so they love each other and then they realize that it was kind of all faked. And then they don't love each other and then they do love each other. And they're really going back and forth, I feel like, in the last scene.
Yeah, they do. But they do end up together in the end. So that's fine. But there's just this weird little line. I can't even find it now looking through the notes. But it just confused me when I watched it. I remember saying to you, like, oh, is this because he thinks it's the other girl? It's not really hero. And you said, no, that's the other couple. And then when I read it, the same thing happens. I'm like, why did they put this weird line in? But look, it doesn't matter. Something that I read at the very end here that I don't remember watching is at the very, very end, a messenger comes in and says, we've captured Don John. Was that in the version we watched?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I think it's the first time something was left out.
There were a couple lines changed and a couple lines left out for the version we watched. So they weren't in an orchard, so they left out the orchard line. And they used, like, the curtain, right?
Oh, yeah, but like, as we said, most of the changes we felt were improvements. This is the first time where I feel something's missing, you know?
I don't remember Benedict saying, think not on him till tomorrow. I'll devise the brave punishments for him. Strike up, pipers. Like, that part. Yeah, I don't remember that at all. I think it ends with, like, get thee a wife.
Yeah. So Benedict and you know, Beatrice are going to get together. That's the happy ending. And then I literally have enter a message.
They're the ones we care about.
John is taken in flight. So they got him. The end. Just literally two lines. I mean, that's lines.
Also really good. I suppose. I don't know.
Do we even care that they've captured John? Like, what crime has he actually committed? Like, what are they charging him with, you know?
Incitement.
Just not being nice. Like,
hey, they could kill for less back then, probably.
This is true.
Who knows?
And look, that's it. Bar one or two moral qualms, I think it's a fantastic play. I wish they had no, like, left hero for dead, and then I don't know if they think they're married to hero or if they think they're married to a secondary hero. And you know,
so this brings me back to the previous question I asked that I don't think I ever got necessarily got an answer for. So do you think the play could have been cut in half, that it was focused only on Benedict and Beatrice, and we could have skipped the Dogberry stuff?
Yes.
We could have skipped the stuff with hero and
definitely, we could have skipped all the Dogberry stuff for sure. Even though it's funny, you know, it's irrelevant. We could have skipped all that.
Yeah.
That's essentially the equivalent of one act gone already. And then,
it's necessary to figure out the issues so that Claudio feels bad, basically.
But we could have had the first two scenes, the first two acts, and then just like a little act wrapping it all up. I feel like there's a lot of unnecessary stuff in it, you know?
Yeah, basically. You could have had, instead of the conflict from Don John for the second half, you could have had the conflict from the relationship of Beatrice Biddick, because that's the main thing I want to watch for. They're so interesting and so fun as a couple. Like, I want more of them on stage. I want more of their wit.
And I recommend reading or watching this, because it comes across in both. Their wit is brilliant.
It's the best wit I've seen in any of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I have some moral qualms with Claudio and things. Whereas Benedict, we think that he's going to be bad at the beginning. He turns out to be, in a way, the best guy in the play, other than maybe Don Pedro. And I even go off Leonardo, because he just curses his daughter and hopes that she never wakes up without any evidence, you know? So,
but he also goes, he does a 180 pretty quickly.
No, hold on. He does, but briefly, when she gets awake, he says he'll tear her with his own hands if the accusations turn out to be true.
I'm thinking at the wedding, but afterwards, he's the one who's wagging his finger at Claudio.
Oh, like, yeah, it's easy to blame someone else.
Okay, that's a pretty quick 180 you did there.
Well, maybe. But yeah, it's a very good play. Let's not make too much out of a small issue. It's a very, very good play.
This was my third or fourth time watching it. I've read it only once, but it's fantastic. It is the best comedy to me.
I did not realize that. Like, I went into this thinking it was just, you know, what you, because there's so many, and you pick out your couple that you like, and the rest will just kind of blend into one. And for me, this was just part of the cluster, you know? And now I'm like, oh, hold on, this one really stands out in a way that I did not remember.
Yeah, yeah. You got, like, Wives of Windsor and stuff. Like,
nobody. Yeah, yeah, I just thought it was part of that, you know? But no, it's really good.
I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you liked it. I feel like people either really, really love it, or they put it in, like, the middle, like you said.
Yeah.
I've never really met anyone who's, like, despising it. I've heard one or two people say, like, yeah, they don't really like the sarcasm. I'm like, but it's so funny. How do you not like it?
Yeah, if you don't
it?
Like the sarcasm, then you're the problem, you know?
Yes. Okay, so they're the ones to blame, not Claudio.
Well, we can share the blame. So that's the last Shakespeare we're going to do for a while. And there's still more. If you don't know this, Shakespeare wrote a lot of plays. So we always come back to some in the future. But we'll leave it there for now. We've done a bunch of miscellaneous plays. And we might do one or two more of those. And then the plan is we're going to do a bunch of Greek plays. I shared the two earlier. So we'll do some of those throughout 2023. But I think that the next one that you and I will do together...
Is that Death of a Salesman?
Is Death of a Salesman, yeah. You finished my sentence for me.
Yes!
Now we get married, because we have chemistry.
We're both single, so...
so we'll do Death of a Salesman. And PJ and I will also do a little one-act Irish play. I don't know why.
So look forward to Death of a Salesman. Yes. I'm really interested to see what you think of it, because you don't generally like American literature. And this one, I feel like, is up there with some of Steinbeck type of novels, but even better, I think. I don't know. It's one I had to study while I was in high school, and I really appreciated it at the time. So,
okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. I mean, I look forward to reading it, because I've heard of it, you know, like, for many years. So it's one of those ones that it's like, I'm happy to finally get around to it, you know.
I don't know if it's going to end up being like Much Ado About Nothing, or more like Streetcar Named Desire. So
I didn't love that one.
Yeah,
as long as it's not Winnie Pricadoo.
I will fight you on that one.
Well, guys, have yourselves a Shakespearean day. And because it's the last Shakespeare for a while, I'm gonna play the outro. Yeah. She complied, a second compromise, slightly stuck to the knife. One with a wire, but with a balloon grip. Off target, you already bet that this whole thing started. Guys, have a Shakespearean day.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.